And I know you, I said earlier in your introduction that you're pursuing a master's degree in human rights. And I was curious, could you please give your perspective, like what role does academia play, particularly in the West, in terms of entrenching these narratives about AMLO being undemocratic, about Mexico?
You know, we've seen the resurgence of these think tanks. They serve an ideological agenda. They are meant to advance ideas. It's a way of almost, the word I would use is launder ideas. So there's these elite ruling class interests, and they want to see certain policies, you know, put forward. And so they filter them through these think tanks that they fund. You know, I think about the Brookings Institution, the Wilson Center. They've all been very, very critical of Mexico, López Obrador. They're the ones who are feeding this narrative that it's, you know, regression into authoritarianism. It's the same language that they use against other left projects throughout Latin America, you know. And it's successful, right? That a lot of projects that have sought, you know, to construct socialism of the 21st century have been demonized. And it's very difficult to advance a defense of these projects in that context. Specifically around academia, you know, I made the decision to enter this human rights program because I was tired of seeing the weaponization of human rights in service of imperialism. You know, oftentimes we only see conversations about civil, political rights, and they're important to defend, right? But we have to understand that they exist in a dialectical, complementary relationship with the positive rights, the economic, social, and cultural rights. You know, for example, here in Mexico, when we talk about human rights, yes, of course, we talk about freedom of expression, freedom of association, the right to vote, the respecting, you know, the civil and political rights. But we also talk about the right to housing, the right to a dignified job, the right to access culture, the right to, you know, unionization, et cetera, et cetera. It's sort of a more fuller in spectrum of the human rights. And so when we only focus on one side, on the negative rights and to the detriment of the positive rights, we actually aren't guaranteeing human rights. But that's the only conversation you hear, is that you know, this authoritarian or budding authoritarian figure threatens human rights, when actually what we're trying to do is, it's actually a pretty modest project if you really think about it. You know, it's to build a social democratic state. It's about building a welfare state, about having the minimal amounts of support for the population so that people can thrive. You know, people often ask me, why did I return to Mexico? Well, on the one hand, to participate and to contribute in the improvement of my country. But the other thing is also, as a working class person myself, I find it easier to not just survive, but to thrive. You know, we have a public health system that is being strengthened. You know, we have public transportation that is affordable and extensive. We have public parks. We have social programs for youth. I feel safer on the streets of Mexico City than I did a few days ago when I was in Washington, D.C. You know, I've talked with friends who live in the United States, and they mentioned that sometimes it feels like U.S. society is coming apart at the seams. Like, there's just so much pressure on people to be able to survive that it really kind of has a negative effect on the enjoyment of life inside the United States. And admittedly, it was anecdotal, but I also lived many years in the United States and Canada, and I saw what that looks like. That's something I can't say about Mexico. Here, I feel so much more alive. You know, I can feel like I can actually thrive as a human being. Obviously, there's also a lot of poverty in Mexico, but that's what we're working to address so that we can have a more fuller experience and, yes, use the state to redistribute wealth.
Okay, so switching gears, let's talk about Morena. So can you give just a brief background about Morena, its impetus? It was a movement turned party, but how did it how did Morena win? And then how has the government approached these types of social improvements? How has it expanded the welfare state?
You know, for a time there, the left, the electoral left, because we should be clear, there is an extra-parliamentary left here in Mexico as well, but the electoral left was orphaned. There was a party called the PRD, the Party of the Democratic Revolution, that was born out of a breakaway from the Institutional Revolutionary Party, as a result of the fraud that happened in 1998. But the fissure started before that, before 1988. And so The PRD for a time was the home of those who sought to participate in parliamentary politics. But then after 2012, the party sold out. It joined what was officially called El Pacto por México, the Pact for Mexico, where it aligned itself with the Institutional Revolutionary Party, the PRI, and the National Action Party, the PAN. So it became very much co-opted and helped advance Peña Nieto's neoliberal agenda. And so the left had to find somewhere else to organize itself. And that is what gave birth to Morena, very much under the leadership of López Obrador. And very quickly after being founded as a party, it started winning elections. And obviously winning 2018 was huge because it wasn't just winning the election for the presidency. He won with a landslide. He won with more than 20 points over his nearest rival, over 53 million votes, right? Like that's a strong mandate, which also translated into a strong majority inside of the Congress. And so there is a very strong mandate to be able to carry out what López Obrador calls the fourth transformation of Mexico. And since then, it's actually continued to be very successful. Of 15 governorship races, it's won 12. It now controls the vast majority of the governorships in this country, expanding not just its power, but its territorial reach. That also informs a bit why we see this kind of coverage inside the United States. I've mentioned this previously in other interviews, but basically the opposition hasn't figured out a way to respond to this political moment. And so they try to hide inside of their conservative strongholds to try to continue to exert power, despite the fact that they don't count on the majority support anymore. They don't really win elections like they used to. And so they're finding themselves marginalized. And so they turn to these think tanks, they turn to imperialism, they turn to these forces where they feel like they can still exert power. And so Morena, has contradictions as well. It's a bit of a mess internally. Right now, everybody's focused on the succession. And I want to close on that with this question. It's a race to see who will be the next president. At the middle, we have Adán Augusto López. He's kind of the centrist. He represents a continuation of López Obrador's policies. We have on the right, Marcelo Ebrard, the foreign minister, always been a very loyal lieutenant to López Obrador, but very much represents more, a more right-wing position. And then there's the left. There's Claudia Sheinbaum, jefa de gobierno, or Mexico City governor, and she very much represents the left candidate in this. She, López Obrador says he doesn't have a favorite, but it's kind of clear that she's his favorite. And so far, she's leading the polls. So what's next is to figure out who will be the representative and what that means. Mexico's a very presidentialist system, right? Presidencialista, we say. Whoever is the candidate, whoever becomes the president, will command a lot of authority inside of the party, will actually help determine, will this process kind of keep going in the same direction? Will it turn to the right, or will it become radicalized and become deeper in terms of the transformation?
And then in terms of polling, just to give some background, what's the approval rating for AMLO right now?
It's sky high. It's extraordinary. Depending on which polling firm you ask, it's somewhere between 60 and 80% approval. And he's amongst the most popular presidents in the world. And so consistently polls very, very, very well. The truth is that despite the very real problems that continue to exist in this country, right? It's, he hasn't transformed everything. Like I said, there's a modest welfare state being constructed. I will say this, 70% of households count on at least one social program. There's been expansion of cash transfer programs. There's been building of new infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. And so people see that this government's different, right? They understand that there is a commitment to the interests of the working class, of the campesinos, of the middle class, the one that didn't exist previously, right? There's a direct access to the president, who gives a daily press conference, which really helps kind of counter the narrative that's out there about that. And that's why he remains popular.
Well, you can't just give people money. That's
that's what they say, but it actually works out pretty well here.
I know. It was a common refrain, like during COVID, right? When there were so many people out of work, it's like, well, you can't just give people money. Really? Because maybe you can.
And what they spend it on? Food, medicine, right. Outings with the family. That stuff stimulates the economy way more than a tax break for the super rich.
Yeah. And so lastly, I wanted to ask you, you're Mexican. But you can give some unique perspective into Mexican politics and the situation in Mexico, given your time having lived in Canada and the United States. So just what do you think it's important for the rest of North America to understand about Mexico? What should they keep in the back of their minds when they listen to the news?
You know, I mentioned earlier in another response about how tragic it seemed that in a country so wealthy that there's so much inequality inside of the United States when I was there recently visiting. That's also true of Mexico. There's no need for there to be the kind of poverty and marginalization that exists here in Mexico or the United States. But speaking about the country, right? Mexico's a wealthy country, right? It has a diverse economy. It has lots of natural resources. But somehow none of that has ever really made it to us the working class. Instead, what we've seen is a deepening of neoliberal orthodoxy. What we've seen is a growing gap between the rich and the poor. We've seen transnational companies having a field day in the country. I mean, you know, when the free trade agreement was first being proposed way back in the early 90s, there was this promise that Mexico was going to become a first world country if we signed this agreement. Well, it's been a number of years now, and that never happened. And so now we're pursuing a different strategy, right? That Mexico is seeking to use the resources of this country in order to benefit the people of this country, right? That doesn't mean that it's going to become a hermit state closed off to the rest of the world. You know, López Obrador just the other week actually stood up to defend the U.S. dollar as the primary instrument for international trade. But the point is that we should be allowed to assert our sovereignty and choose our economic path, our social path, to decide that we want to do things a little bit differently and not have to face the wrath of imperialism, not have to face these demonizing articles. You know, working class Mexicans and working class North Americans have more in common than they don't, right? I know lots of people throughout North America love to visit Mexico on vacation and they have an amazing time. And they always come back saying, oh, I just met the most amazing people. We can be allies in this struggle. We have a common enemy. But we do need people in North America to resist the forces of U.S. imperialism so that we can have that room to breathe and perhaps serve as a model of inspiration to show that things don't have to be the way that they are, that things can get better for us, the working class.
Awesome. Thank you so much, José Luis, for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.